Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Friday edition of The Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and that's it. Drew under the weather, so Dan is at the controls. I'm over here, so we would appreciate hearing from you. I mean, we got quite a few things we can talk about.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on, in the and we really have not talked too much about our expectations for the college football playoff. If we want, we could maybe get into the bracket a little bit. There's been so much going on over these last 5 days or so in college athletics, and that bombshell in the middle of the week with the Michigan job opening up in a story that, you know, as I said yesterday, like, quickly stopped being a sports story, right, and started being something else with police
news
involved.
Yes.
And, you know, a story of mental health and a whole lot more. So, a former coach now facing pretty serious charges in Michigan related to that. But amid all of that, you've still got the intrigue of the college football playoff going on nationally, and here in Auburn, a football coach rounding out his staff in week
continuing
two.
To add to it. I mean, today the official announcement of the one of probably the least surprising news on the coaching staff of Alex Golish, Cody Burns.
Yeah, Cody Burns, former Auburn quarterback, former Auburn receiver, former Auburn receivers coach, who's back in the fold after working alongside Alex Golish. Not all that surprising, I think, for a variety of reasons. One, because he's been so tight with Coach Golish
who called him his right-hand man.
Yeah, over the last five, 6 years, you know, since arriving at Tennessee and going with Golish to South Florida. Also, Cody was at the press conference on Monday, right?
Like he was at, yes, he was.
And I believe he was at the meeting with the players.
Was that just 4 days ago?
No.
No, that was
last
week.
Yeah, this is week two.
It's like, man, it.
A different press conference was
this. No, that's right. That's right. He wasn't at the press conference this past
Monday. No, but he was at the introductory press conference.
Yes,
and I believe he was in the video where Alex Golish meets the team, which was released before that press conference. So I mean, it's possible Cody was on the plane, right, on Sunday, like coming up from Tampa.
Well, I think he was.
Like Cody might have been on that plane. So he's been at work, you know, the last 2 weeks, and now I guess with the staff rounding into form. And I think there was also the question of
if
you had a receivers coach you really liked, Cody had some experience coaching running backs.
Right.
So I believe that's what he did with the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
I could have that wrong, but
he did.
Yeah, he's coached running backs in his career too.
But Auburn announced Larry Porter as running backs coach just a day or so ago. So Cody is the associate head coach, co-offensive coordinator, and wide receivers coach.
Yeah, and the co-offensive coordinator title he's sharing with a guy that we've talked about that's Joel Gordon, the offensive coordinator at South Florida. And I would say this about Joel Gordon. Like, if Auburn were building a staff from scratch, like if there was no Alex Golish and you were, you know, if DJ Durkin had gotten the job, or if you had hired someone else.
You're looking for a young, young offensive coordinator with explosive offenses.
Yeah, like, I mean,
look right there at Joel Gordon.
I think Joel Gordon would have been a target to be an offensive coordinator in the SEC, maybe even at Auburn, no matter who. Even if in some weird twist of fate you'd done just enough to win down the stretch and Hugh Freeze was still the head coach, right? Like, if you'd won the Kentucky game and you'd upset Vanderbilt or something, and you're still looking and saying, this needs a hard reset on offense, where do we go to get that hard reset? Joel Gordon would have been one of those, would have been one of the top candidates.
Oh, you're not kidding.
And instead, he does something that I think a lot of folks, and another reason I think people would have wanted to be in the Joel Gordon sweepstakes is, If you would think that hiring Joel Gordon would put you on track to, or in, you know,
you'd, give you an inside track.
You'd maybe. you'd be in the catbird seat. You'd have the inside track for Byron Brown if Brown wanted to stay in college football and make the jump from USF to a major conference team next year.
Yeah, you would think that if Byron Brown had a decent relationship with his head coach, associate head coach, or offensive coordinator, Auburn would be in really good shape because all three of those men are now at Auburn.
Right, and we've seen just in the last couple of years situations like Diego Pavia following his coaches
to Vanderbilt. Yeah, multiple coaches, that's right.
And John Mateer following his offensive coordinator to Oklahoma, and those, you know, I asked Don Dunn earlier in the week about this, about like what would be the benefits if you're a quarterback and you want to make that jump, what would be the benefits with sticking with your coaches and following them to a school rather than starting over more or less? And you're starting over at the new school too, but you're starting over.
But if you have the same play caller and the same system, you understand the terminology, you understand what's expected. And when you were as successful as Byron Brown was this past year, you would figure, he would only be able to try to improve on what he did a year ago. Maybe not numbers-wise, but the understanding of the system and being able to run it.
Yeah, I've heard the term no-brainer used, and I think that's how Coach Dunn described it. Where it's like if you have that advantage, like if it's an option for both sides, it feels a lot easier than starting over with a quarterback who hasn't played much, or if you're the quarterback moving into an offense that you aren't as familiar with, and coaches that you haven't played. You know, it's learning a new system, learning new coaches. You're going to learn new teammates no matter what, but it feels like the transition. Like there were reasons for, and look, and I suppose Pavia and Mateer could have picked bigger schools or more money or stayed closer to home or, you know, whatever. But it feels like there are multiple reasons why, like, that's not a reason. That's not – Byron Brown alone is not the reason to hire Joel Gordon, right? Like Joel Gordon would have been – Joel Gordon's track record speaks for itself.
Oh, yes. I mean, you wouldn't just – sometimes you see assistants brought in – because there is a super player that could come in as well, but Joel Gordon's his own merits have earned him this job here at Auburn.
Does Larry Porter have any connection to Golish from his past,
or
is this so?
I believe he is one that they've competed. Let's see, Larry Porter he's been at a lot of places,
including Auburn.
Yeah,
like, which I think the fact that he's got familiarity.
There may have been. Let me check. Let me check Larry's.
I mean, you look and like it seems like with Larry Porter, or with almost all of these coaches now, they have a connection to Golish, they have a connection to Durkin, or they have a connection to Auburn.
Right.
Like that. It's and one of those three things. And that's
is there anyone who doesn't have a connection to either Alex Golish or DJ Durkin?
That would be Larry Porter. Would be my one.
That's what I'm checking.
Larry
right
Porter
now.
Would be the one that would fit that bill potentially.
Yeah, I do believe. Yeah, I don't believe that he has worked with. Well, Alex Golish, I'm sure he's competed against him.
But he's been a head coach, and he's been a position coach at Auburn during a really successful period. So I think that and he's got a track record. I mean, and he was for 20 years, Larry Porter was talked about as one of the best recruiters.
He has been National Recruiter of the Year.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, this is a guy when he was with Les Miles at Oklahoma State, when he was with Les Miles at LSU. Mm-hmm. That's how he got the Memphis job. Like, I mean, I think this is a guy who absolutely and has ties to the community. Right, like I mean, was here before? Was
here from 2017 to 2020,
and was well liked. I remember he had the son who playing sports, right? Like I mean, Larry Porter had some, I think that's a guy who fits and seems like he, again, if you're gonna go outside of the Golish tree, bringing in somebody with Larry Porter's track record and Larry Porter's experience in Auburn, I think makes a lot of sense.
And has produced some great running backs as well, not just a recruiter. And there Cody can slide into his natural position as receivers coach and Larry be the running backs.
Porter was coaching for Mack Brown the last couple of UNC seasons there.
He was with Mack at Texas, and then after being at Auburn, Mack rehired him to North Carolina.
And Amarian Hampton had a couple really good seasons at UNC. He's now on the Chargers as the starter. He's an excellent running back who developed over time, you know, with Larry Brown's with Larry Porter's tutelage. I do wonder. I mean, to me, the next couple of weeks, I mean, yeah, assistant coaches, they're I mean, the staff feels.
Has Auburn still got one spot? Is there a tight ends coach? I don't think
there's not a tight ends coach. Brunowski has coached tight ends before.
Right.
Your new special teams coach has coached tight ends before. And I guess Larry Porter was
But now you're not limited.
You're not limited. So you could see an addition at that position. But for the most part, a lot of those over the last 10 days or so, a lot of those dominoes have fallen. You're waiting to see what happens with the marquee players who have decisions to make over these next couple of weeks.
Yeah, that is the key, and that's what Alex Golish talked about, you know, at both of his press conferences that we've been at with him. Oh, by the way, we're somewhere in line.
Okay.
For an interview with the coach.
Oh, wonderful! Yeah, we'd love to have him pop in on the drive, either on the phone or if he wants to come in the studio.
Oh, absolutely,
that'd be a lot of fun too. Take some calls. We were talking about it yesterday with Justin. This was before you got here, and I think one advantage Auburn has, and this is, I mean, some of the credit here goes to Hugh Freeze and his staff for setting things up this way, but you look at the guys Auburn would like to retain, maybe, I mean, among the most promising freshmen and sophomores, and there are juniors too, but it's like you think about how many of them are guys who picked their local school with Auburn.
Oh, yeah, I heard you talking about that.
Cam and Malcolm, Jeremiah Cobb.
Right.
You could lump defensively Malik Blockton would be in that mix. I mean you have some guys that are you know pretty local as far as their decision to you know the decision they made to play at Auburn and whether or not that plays into you know whether or not that ultimately informs their decision. You do like especially for like keeping the defensive front seven together. The fact that some of these guys are local and the fact that you're keeping Vontrell and DJ Durkin in place, like I do think you've presented – I mean, things are going to be different, but there's some stability and there's some –
Oh, there is.
It's not the gigantic shakeup that we've seen some
No, where players are unsure as to what their role might be or how they'd fit in.
It's not quite –
Offensively a little more of a question, but they can look at the South Florida offense, I think, and say – Ooh, that'd be fun.
But you think about the shakeup going from like Gus to Harsin,
right?
For those defensive linemen, and how many of them decided, hey, this isn't what I signed up for, and I'm going to go play somewhere else.
Well, I mean, you look at the other schools. I mean, I guess you know Florida is going from an offensive guy to a defensive guy, from Billy Napier to John Sumrall. I mean, LSU's going from Brian Kelly to Les. I mean, to Lane. And
by the way, those two coaches will play pretty early in the season.
What Alex and John?
Alex Golish
and
John
Sumrall. Game three. We'll take a look at the schedule. Look around the SEC schedule. Yeah. I watched about an hour and a half of that last night.
We were doing the Observer podcast while that was going on. So periodically we check in.
I think the SEC did the best job I can ever recall of trying to prevent teams from having those ridiculous 3-4 games on the road. There are very few teams.
I mean, the second half of the season.
There is no team that has three consecutive road games.
The second half of the season for Auburn is relatively light.
October is tough.
Yeah. Well, no, I would say, here's what I was going to say. And this is in part because you open with a neutral site game and three home games.
Right.
The second half of the season, and especially like the last five games, are very light on needle moving home games.
Yes.
And you'd sort of like, if you could do this in the SEC, you'd sort of like every team to have a big home game in the last two or three weeks of the season.
Or you could be like, was it Tennessee or who? I mean, there are a couple of teams.
Maybe that, last 4 weeks.
I was going to say there are a couple of teams that don't see home again after mid-November.
Right.
You know, and don't even make it there.
But I think, all told, the point I made, and this was before we realized when these games were, just knowing Auburn's nine opponents going into next season and understanding, all right, Iron Bowl's probably going to be when it always is. Georgia mm-hmm. game has seemingly moved into a spot
right.
where
it's one of, the first half of the season
It's one of your first two or three conference games.
Right.
I mean, how many sure things are there in the SEC going into next year?
There are not many. Not many at all because we don't know. You don't know what the rosters are going to be. And you've got a half a dozen new coaches, even though you know Lane. I mean, you know what to expect from Lane. Offensively.
And of the programs that you feel like should be sure things, Georgia is probably one of the two or three safest bets in all of college football.
The most stable, sure. I would say.
By all means. I mean, the other ones that you might talk about, Texas A&M, Oklahoma, like, they're not on Auburn's schedule next year.
Right.
Like, those those three would get votes right now as far as, like, the surest things going into next year in the SEC.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe three of the top four or five teams in the league.
Yeah, because, again, you start at quarterback, and they've got guys coming back.
And how about this? What do you know about LSU going into next year? You feel pretty good that Lane's going to eventually get that thing rolling, but year one? I mean,
I wonder if they're going to have Bryce Underwood.
Who knows?
They could have
a couple of different options at quarterbacks. Ole Miss. How on earth do you know what Ole Miss?
What
looks?
A change that is.
Yeah,
from Lane Kiffin to Pete Golding,
and even Alabama, because I think there are people that are. I mean, first of all, I've said this already this week. Fair or not, if DeBoer loses to Oklahoma. For a guy who made the SEC championship game and the college football playoff in year two, he will be astonishingly unpopular.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
With that fan base.
That would be back-to-back four lost seasons, that's beyond, comprehension for a lot of
Alabama. There are like three-year stretches in the Saban era.
No, where he lose a total of four games.
Where he doesn't lose four games over the course of three seasons. Could that lead him to be how real is the Michigan stuff?
I don't know.
If they don't have a coach.
Sounds like Kenny Dillingham is.
Kenny Dillingham's name has come up as well.
Seems like he's much more involved there than other jobs.
If DeBoer loses to Oklahoma and Michigan still hasn't hired a coach, you're going to smell a rat.
They can't pluck a bigger name than that.
You're going to smell a rat that weekend, yeah. Ooh,
speaking of coaches, you see the latest today? Kyle Whittingham, retiring. He's stepping down. So, I mean, you've got another
one of the longest tenured. I mean, Whittingham replaced Urban Meyer at Utah after the 2004 season, and he's been there ever since. And he's been a guy that people have talked about for other jobs, but consistently had them winning, got them. They make the playoff under him. I want to say there was a year where they.
I thought they did.
Yeah, once. I mean, it was. I mean, but he's a. Yeah, he's an excellent coach, and I mean, I tend to believe these guys when they retire. We haven't seen a lot of these guys step away.
He's been so hesitant to leave and go somewhere else. I can't see him retiring and then
haven't talked about this at all this week. The big unretirement buzz in college athletics this week has been with the reversal of fortune on the court. For the Kentucky Wildcats, how many of those fans? I mean, you look at it's all over social media. The clear cut choice, if Kentucky moves on from Mark Pope among the fan base, is
the same name that they've talked about multiple times while he was still coaching.
Former Auburn coach Bruce Pearl, and Bruce Pearl sounded. Very serious about his retirement, but I think Mitch Barnhart would. I think Mark Pope's going to get another season. I think it's very like things would have to go so bad in conference play for you to make your decision.
I think you've got to wait and see how things do go. I mean, it's still early. A lot of teams. Mm-hmm. that are big time factors in March struggle in November, December.
I'll tell you what, that team has gotten booed off the floor too often at this point in the season.
Yeah.
And yeah, I could see why if you put yourself in their shoes, right? Like a Kentucky fan. Like, I could see why they would view Bruce as the answer to so many of those problems potentially if it doesn't work with Mark Pope. And yeah, you just wonder how much of that's real and how much of that's just wishful thinking on social media.
Yeah, well, I think the feeling from the fans is definitely real. All right, we'll get to our first break. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise as we're just underway here on the Friday Drive.
It's football season in Alabama, and at
PigInterfaceAU.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and you can join us 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
We might go we might go lightning round and just put you right on the air be ready to say caller, you're on the air. So
yeah, because Dan is having to run the board and try to answer the phones as well.
So 2 weeks in, Alex Golish, what stands out to you? Let's preface this. Bill realized at the press conference introducing Alex Golish that he had been to every with the asterisk that the Harsin one was over Zoom, but they've done most of these. They've done most of these in person.
Everyone that could be attended in person, I've been to since Coach Dye was introduced.
So 40 plus years ago into these things, you've seen new coaches come and go.
Mm-hmm. And look, I've seen coaches win the press conference and succeed. Mm-hmm. I've seen them win the press conference and flop miserably. I've seen them feel uncomfortable at the opening press conference and do just fine. So, I mean, you can't judge just on, you know, what you've seen or heard in interviews or press conferences.
But what do you think of how Alex did so far?
I thought he's done very well. He has been, I mean, there's no question he's very detailed. So you can see the attention to detail. You absolutely can't miss the fact that he is driven. He is someone who is, there's no question that I feel like he's going to work. He's going to work as hard as he can. Now we'll see how things go, but I've been impressed with everything he's done thus far. He pretty much laid out that the current roster was the first most important goal was to get with the players, get to know the players, find out as much as he could about them, how they're going to fit into what his plans are, and how much they wanted to be at Auburn. And I think they've done just that. And we'll see. I mean, I think Auburn's had 9 players announce that they're entering the transfer portal with the addition of Hollis Davidson today. These are players for the most part. I mean, when I look at them, I understand why they'd be entering the transfer portal, because they don't seem to fit into what Coach Golish and I would say Coach Durkin have in mind. So, best of luck to the guys that are jumping into the portal.
Yeah, although, I mean, it also could be in the case of a Hollis Davidson. I mean, some of these guys maybe had an attachment to one or more of the coaches that aren't coming back. And, I mean, I think it's too early to sort of – I mean, Alex Golish would tell you, like, I don't know if it's necessarily about, like, this kind of player, stylistically doesn't fit into the Alex Golish offense. It's more about, like, then he'll say it. Do you want to be here? Mm-hmm. Is this the place where you want to play the rest of your college football, or do you want to go somewhere else and try something different?
Yeah, if you're not sure that you want to be here, go ahead.
Right.
Check things out.
But I think that, Alex Golish will tell you, like, at Tennessee and at South Florida, he had different types of receivers and tight ends and running backs. And, it's not so much about, like, if you can play, you can play in the Alex Golish offense. And for Hollis, I think that's, it was a roller coaster year on the team for Hollis too, right? I mean, he had injuries, he had a legal situation pop up, right? So, I mean, this is a guy who Yeah, like if he wants to go start over and start anew at a new program, you know, I think it's too bad because I heard some great stuff about him as a high school senior and you know when he was able to get healthy and get out there. Like, I mean, I think it didn't take long for them to start playing him as a pass catching option. But
is Ryan Gee the only tight end left on the roster right now?
That would seem right. I mean, was the Maryland was Preston a senior?
I'm not sure.
I don't remember if Preston
Howard
was.
He may have been a junior.
Yeah.
He may have
so been a junior. Preston might have.
Yeah.
Preston Howard might have another year. But no, I think that could be a position where.
Well, I think it's without question a position that Alex Golish, Joel Gordon.
Depending on how big.
Planning on bringing in probably a couple of guys.
Well, depending on how big of a factor it is in what they do in their offense,
like,
right?
You still like to have a couple of guys that can go out there and help you blocking and. But if catch a pass occasionally,
right? But if you're going to be rolling with a lot of tight ends and receivers, then you know it's going to be, we'll see how much they prioritize that in the when the portal is open. We mentioned it before, like, I mean, the two, and I think there's more than two because I would put Jeremiah Cobb on my list based on what they've shown so far. But like the two guys that feel like if you're talking about offense. Justin said it yesterday, like the two guys that feel like the biggest priorities to hang on to for Auburn, if you're gonna start talking about roster retention, on offense, it feels like
I feel like they're four.
Cam and Malcolm strike me as the top two, especially with the way Malcolm finished the season. Jeremiah Cobb with a year remaining, would be great, and those are three. As we mentioned, three local products, and then people mentioned Deuce, right?
I think Deuce is among your players that you really, really want to keep.
It feels like there's a distinction there because the other three
there's a different pitch for him though.
Well, yeah, well, the other three guys have proven more on the field in college football.
The guys are returning starters,
exactly,
basically.
and would seemingly profile as starters anywhere in the SEC, like. I mean that's and I don't think you would say that about Deuce in the portal, but there's a ton of potential there and there's
Alex Golish has been interviewed a little lately and has really really spoken highly of Deuce Knight and how much Auburn would love to retain Deuce Knight tonight. So I think he's one of the priorities.
Oh, absolutely, and I think you know the cleanest. You know, if Deuce isn't the starter next year, I mean the thought of having someone who's playing really well, who's got 1 year left, and then Deuce Knight taking over from there, like that's sort of a dream scenario in a world where Deuce isn't the starter. Like that's almost like best case scenario for, and I don't think just for Auburn, but maybe for Deuce too. I mean, look, there's a version of this where Deuce Knight says, all right, well, if you don't think I'm good enough to be the starter, I'm going to go drop down a level to the Sun Belt and find a coaching staff and an offense I really like, and I'm going to be one of the great mid-major quarterbacks next year, and then everyone will think I'm a starter going into 27, if Deuce wants to do that. But he also could think that there's benefits to staying at the SEC level and maybe even staying at Auburn. And continuing his development and continuing to get more and more familiar with college football after a first year where, especially in that Mercer game, there were some highlights, but it was really just a very small taste of actual college football action that Deuce got. And going from that to starting the Baylor game next year is an enormous jump. And if they aren't sure that he's quite ready for it, but he still could be a great player down the road, you know, I think if you're not going to be a starter, why not stay at Auburn rather than not start somewhere else? If you're insistent on being the starting quarterback in 26 and you want to go find somewhere where that's the case, you know by all means, you know, go light it up, go let it rip. But I could see a version of this where there's like a bridge from now to whenever Deuce Knight is the starting quarterback. And in the meantime, how much better could he get?
Just in case it's not game one of the 2026 season.
Which would be a huge, I mean, because keep in mind, he wasn't the starter for the Iron Bowl.
Right.
Really, I mean, you're talking about a guy who, and the starter for the Iron Bowl could still be on the team in 2026, right? I mean, you've got Ashton, who, you know, they sat him for Mercer with the expectation.
Being able to have him for Alabama and have him be able to return for another year.
Right.
At Auburn or wherever.
So there's that X factor as well. Maybe Ashton Daniels, you know, spends some or all of 26 as that bridge to whenever Deuce Knight is ready. It could also be someone who's not on the team right now, and someone who is maybe looking to make the jump to the SEC via the portal.
I mentioned Alex Golish on the next round today. Mm-hmm. Was asked about the quarterbacks and a couple of the quotes, and I think it was Nathan King wrote a little story about it, but he said he's watched every snap that both Ashton and Deuce took at least five times this year, and still feels like he has an incredibly talented start to a quarterback room. But something I didn't realize, talked about that when Deuce was a freshman in high school, he camped at Tennessee when Alex Golish was the offensive coordinator. And he said, quote, "I thought, man, this young man's going to be incredibly special, and I still believe that." I mean, so, they'd love to keep him, but we'll see how things work out. All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break.
We had a caller. Yeah, we'll take a break in a second. We had a caller ask earlier this week about sort of and prioritizing Deuce Knight. And I still don't think, like, I don't think you prioritize Deuce Knight to the point where you turn away an option that you think can win you games in 2026.
No, I think that would be very, very difficult to do. I know it's your first year, and you don't have to go out and win 10 games this year or your job's on the line, but I still think that Alex Golish feels every opportunity you have to win any ball game, that you're going to want to get the player that helps you do that.
Now, if you think that's Deuce, that's a little bit different,
right?
I don't know if you can build for the future to that degree. If you're not sure Deuce is the starter, but you're still going to let him out there, because you want to see where the development takes you. Over several years,
I would say, especially if you feel like you have the inside track, you have a better chance than anyone of, in case Byron Brown enters the portal, of getting him, because he will be highly sought after.
Yeah, now, that's a way to. I mean, you could make the case that with Byron Brown in the fold and with the top retention targets held on to, Auburn would be in a better position than anyone else with a first-year head coach. And that's a list that could potentially include a playoff team.
Includes
a playoff team in Ole Miss, and it includes LSU. Right? So it's like if you make the right moves, and Byron Brown, I think, would be one of them, you could be talking about that kind of offseason.
Yeah. We'd love your thoughts. 334-321-1390. Come on in and join us here on the Friday Drive. Game Day Men's Health in Auburn, it's
com.
Welcome back into the drive. 17 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we're pretty wide open. I mean, any direction anybody wants to head.
Yeah, this time next week, you'll have college football playoff games going on.
That's right.
I mean, we'll be getting ready for the Friday night game, which is Oklahoma, Alabama. Mm-hmm. That's and then the other three are on the following Saturday. So we'll be on the doorstep of the college football playoff this time next week. What do you think of Alabama's draw with Oklahoma
and Norman? I think Alabama got a good draw. I really do.
The winners got Indiana. That's
right.
I still
think that's and look, no slight. What an unbelievable job Kurt Cignetti and Fernando Mendoza and company have done this year. But Alabama's more talented than Indiana
I think people are going to point out that Indiana, you think about the teams that made, like the teams that did not make it into the top four, Oregon, excuse the mid-majors for a second, but teams like Oregon and Alabama and Oklahoma and Ole Miss and Miami and Texas A&M, like I think folks were going to say any of those teams probably come into the Indiana game with more talent than Indiana.
Yeah. I agree. They're an outstanding team. They really are. They have played. The sum has been better than the individual parts combined.
Yeah, and keep in mind they beat Ohio State, right?
Yes.
So the thought that they can't win against any of these. You know, now they're playing teams with real talent, and it's going to be a reality check for Indiana. It's like, well, the Big Ten championship game had Ohio State, and
Ohio State was a solid favorite.
And Ohio State has more talent than maybe anyone else
yes.
in the field. I think it's very easy to say, like, oh man, the winner of Alabama Oklahoma, because they seem to be not just better but considerably better than Indiana on paper, has this great draw to maybe get into the semifinals, but that's, I don't know, discount Indiana at your own risk, right?
I still think that these teams, if given, given the choice, would rather have Indiana on their side of the bracket than Ohio State.
And Oklahoma has not played, like, really impressive offense down the stretch.
No, they haven't. John Mateer has just not been the same since he hurt that thumb against Auburn.
That win at Tennessee that we said at the time, like, I think a lot of folks thought that Oklahoma was going in and Heupel was just going to really let his old team have it. And instead, Oklahoma really played well and had the advantage throughout that game. And you go back and look now, Oklahoma couldn't afford to lose any of these games.
No.
Like,
no,
9-3,
you're right.
9-3 Oklahoma wouldn't have been in the playoff. They lose that Auburn game?
No.
If they lose
they had two or three.
Yeah. Yeah, LSU right at the end of the season. They have the LSU game that they need to come back and win and hold off LSU there at the end. So it's like having I've had concerns all season about Oklahoma's offense, but they've done enough to make it to the college football playoff. Alabama has had a very protecting Ty Simpson has been surprisingly difficult
these last couple
of weeks.
It's gotten tougher down the stretch.
It's gotten tougher
really
down the
has.
Stretch. And Oklahoma is, especially with a couple weeks off, maybe the best front seven in this playoff field. They're one of them. They're right there. They're as good.
Alabama has to. They have to be able to do something to take the pressure off Ty Simpson. Jam Miller, I think, is expected back. But is he just going to be able to run the ball against Oklahoma? I just don't know. When they played earlier this year, Alabama outgained them by 150 yards, but Oklahoma was able to come up with big plays, special teams, turnovers to win the ball game.
Yeah, I just think that game looks to be a street fight on paper next week. And then you've got the other stuff swirling about, like, will it be DeBoer's last game as Alabama head coach?
There'll be a whole lot more talk if
Oklahoma wins and beats them for the second time this season, third time as an SEC team.
Yeah, and third time in like 13 months.
Third time in 13 months. You've got Oregon James Madison is the – well, actually, no, let's go in order. So that's the Friday night game. Saturday morning starts on ABC with Miami at Texas A&M. So that's the 10-7 game.
That's a fun game.
Winner's got Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl.
I like A&M. It's not a guarantee, but I really like A&M.
Haven't watched a ton of Miami down the stretch, to be completely honest. I know that
we're missing Drew.
Yeah, well, you know, Drew would be helpful. I know Miami didn't really play. I mean, you look, Miami's last four were not competitive. They blew out Syracuse. They blew out NC State. They blew out Virginia Tech. They blew out Pitt. I do get a little bit worried when it's like, you know, you haven't been in a lot of wars. And the ones you were in, like, I mean, Miami lost by 3 to Louisville. They lost by 6 to SMU in overtime. That Florida State game, they were doing everything. If it weren't for, like, 3 of the worst onside kick attempts you'll ever see in your life, Florida State would have come back from down 24 to beat Miami, like 21, whatever it was. They were done in the fourth quarter, and they stormed back and nearly won that game. So I just I have concerns about what Miami will be if this thing's close in the fourth quarter, and I also don't know, like, when was the last time they saw a team A&M good?
Oh, they haven't. I don't think they have. Carson has had a really good year. Carson Beck's had a really good year for Miami, but I just don't know against that A&M defense. And Marcel Reed has been pretty dang good.
I mean, those are the two. I know you've got two other and look, the longer either of the two games featuring smaller conference champions, or the longer either of those games is close, right? Like, I think folks will be more and more interested, but. Miami A&M is the 11 a.m. game on ABC. TNT and True TV and I think HBO Max will have the Tulane-Ole Miss game. That is the 2:30 game from Oxford. Ole Miss, a solid favorite against the Wave.
Well, they won by 35 in the regular season. Yep. And then you've got the Oregon-James Madison game is the Saturday night.
And the last game is Saturday night.
Yeah,
that one's also on the Turner family of networks, and that one is Oregon also a solid favorite.
It's hard to imagine how that one can.
I mean, James Madison Troy was a battle going into. I mean, I know the final score makes it seem like James Madison blew him out, but like that was a one score game late, and then Troy makes a mistake and James Madison capitalizes and gets a couple of scores late. But like, I mean, that in the fourth quarter, that's anyone's game. And so, yeah, I just, James Madison of the two. I mean, who knows what you're going to get out of Ole Miss?
Yeah,
right. I mean, that's the one where I'd say, like, maybe the longer that one's close, the more folks will start to panic that Lane Kiffin's not there anymore. And
I mean, Charlie Weiss and four other assistants are going to be back for that. But John Sumrall's still coaching Tulane.
What a flat start it would be for Golding, right?
To lose that one
at home, and you know what? And what a great start it would be if he goes on a run as Ole Miss's coach, but. I don't like the draw for JMU at all. As much as I try to support the Sun Belt teams in these scenarios, and I think there's some money in it for all the Sun Belt teams because they got a team in the college football playoff. I don't know how long James Madison's run is going to be against a team like Oregon.
All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Plenty of time for you to join in. Anything on your minds?
7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final couple of minutes here in hour number one. Let's get to The Drive hotline. And Brian. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Bill, Dan. Happy Friday to you. Here's my quandary, and I need your guys' help with it. So I keep rolling around this in my head, and I need your help to figure this out. So my biggest concern with this whole thing with the Brown kids coming, if he does come from USF, and granted, hopefully the goal would be to keep both Deuce and him.
Sure.
But in a world where that's not possible and Deuce leaves, my concern is you know. Yeah, we might get immediate satisfaction, but what do we do? And I know this is all hypothetical anyway, but, you know, we can't – we're back to square one with back probably in the portal the following year. Does it make sense? And do you guys think, you know, if in my opinion, if you let Deuce play it out, and he goes 7-5 next year, but with the potential of being better than that in the following years, do you think it makes sense to do that, or do you still think having someone like a Brown, the Brown come in and get, because you may, he might take us to 10-2 next year, but then after that you're back just looking for a quarterback. I don't know. I just keep bouncing that around.
I have a tough time passing on a guy that could get you to a level that
using the numbers you picked there, like I would take the quarterback that gets me to 10-2 and potentially the college football playoff next year versus the guy that can maybe get me to 7-5 in his second year.
I will say this. I know we're out of time, but Auburn's recruiting some of the top young quarterbacks in the country for the future.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. It's hour number two of the Friday Drive with Bill and Dan. Love for you to join us as we head into the weekend, a weekend where Auburn basketball will be back in action. It's very unusual. Stephen Pearl talking yesterday about only having 3 games in 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. That's very unusual. You've got a similar situation, Dan. I was a little surprised that you don't have a game over the weekend.
Yeah, Trojans going, you know, pretty much 1 game a week in December, and then taking about, I think it's 10 days off between playing at Alabama and starting and starting conference play back up on New Year's Day. So I think some of that's just in December, you have to schedule around finals,
right,
and you have the holiday. You want to let, you know, kids be with their families for a couple days if possible.
Spend some time with their family.
And there's also, you know, I think a lot of teams would rather not play non-conference games right now if they can avoid it. You know what I mean? Like those first 6-7 weeks of the season were prime for that, and now it's a little bit tougher. And the fact that Auburn, nothing against Chattanooga. Like I think the Mocs are a good program, but and they were preseason, you know, one of the top picks in the conference. But the fact that Auburn's playing a 250-300 ballpark net team, that's a tougher draw for a game that used to feature Auburn against a Big Ten superpower.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, that wasn't the original plan. Who was it? There had been rumblings.
Somebody backed out, yeah.
Rumblings about, some other big names in there. Right now, looking at it, Stephen Pearl's probably not brokenhearted because, yeah. I mean, this schedule is more than challenging. He called it aggressive the other day.
And Chattanooga's a different kind of challenge because they are smaller than Auburn, and they're going to be content really trying to shoot a lot of threes at the perimeter. You know, that's their game. And I think
they've said they've had a couple of 20-plus made three games.
They've had a couple of games where they just let it fly and had a lot of success. So, that's going to be something that Auburn has to – and if you remember the Bethune game, right, like there were times when Auburn was giving up the looks that were far too open at the 3-point line, and that's something that Steven's going to have to really drill in to this team tomorrow. Is that like they have to earn, they have to make them really work hard to be open from the outside, because this is a team that can hit and everyone they play, you know, frequently they're going with four or five man lineups that feature shooters, and that's. That's something that you need to be ready for tomorrow. I think Auburn should have, like, it feels like Auburn could have more success around the basket themselves
than they've had in
recent games. And being able to attack the paint was key in the St. John's win. It was important in the NC State win. So I think that's something Auburn wants to be able to do more of. Curious to see what the rotation. If you see more Emeka, if you see more.
I think you will. I think you'll see more of Emeka Apuram.
Simon?
I was a little surprised.
Maybe.
We haven't seen much of him because Stephen Pearl really raved about his defensive prowess back during the preseason, and then you know we got a glimpse of the kind of shooter that he is.
Does it seem like Bashir is close with whatever's going on there? Injury,
I mean,
I don't know
what the injury situation is, but I mean he has struggled when he's had the opportunity, and I don't know how much of that. I would assume that a good bit of it's because he's not 100%.
I'll tell you what though, Auburn, that's something you're uncomfortable with right now. We'll get to the phones in just a sec, but like Auburn is reliant on, and a lot of teams in college basketball feel this way, but like Tahad and Overton and the Keyshawns have to stay healthy and have to stay out of foul trouble because it's just like you don't know where you're going with. I mean, you have Sebastian Williams Adams who can step in and play well.
Yeah, but in the backcourt, I mean, you don't have a whole lot of other options as far as somebody to handle the ball.
Yeah, like what's the plan if Overton turns an ankle tomorrow? Like, who's going in and taking those minutes?
Maybe Elijah
Magwood.
I don't know.
He might be out there. Like Elijah.
Well, that's true. Like, but I'm trying to think who could slide in there.
Yeah.
It would have to be, I would think, Magwood. But I mean, they've tried to avoid playing Tahad and Kevin at the same time.
Yeah. So I mean, it's gotten like you really want one or more of those bench pieces to pan out in a way where you can play them effectively, and that's something you're still. You're still waiting to see more of that as you get ready for conference play in a couple weeks.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Again, sort of flying blind here today as Dan is running the board, and we're able to get your call and put it on hold. But we don't know who we're talking to until you tell us. Hey, how are you doing today? Who have we got?
Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is Pat.
Hey, Pat.
Hey, man.
Hey, guys. I wanted to chime in on this coaching scenario. So I'm looking at it and I'm thinking to myself, if you were to take Auburn and say that we switched and that we had Sumrall right now, and we have his exact situation. He's coaching in wherever Tulane. Coaching up that game, where would we be right now in terms of coaching, coaches, player retention? How would we feel as fans right now if we had hired Sumrall?
Probably like a lot of Florida fans are feeling right now. They're more than a little concerned.
Yeah, I wonder what else would have been different over the last couple of weeks, right? Like, what kind of staff can Pat Sawyer can Sumrall put together? Is there any high profile player already, you know, willing to come out and say he's going into the portal? I think that's interesting. I mean, I think that the belief that Alex Golish maybe has the inside track not only to keep some of those exciting offensive players, but also, maybe bring in a couple of outsiders is one of the reasons why you think he can do well, you know, and hit the ground running from the very start.
It just feels like I'm just so thrilled at the way it's all panning out. I mean, we got Cody Burns back. I mean, he's such a great person. I mean, I just remember, you know, him doing the butterfly, you know, the angel on the field. I just when we won the national championship, it's all falling together so almost like perfectly. Like DJ Durkin's here, and now we're getting, you know, defensive coordinators to come be our position coaches. I mean, it's just, you know, the people hitting the portal are people really that, you know, for the most part, probably, I don't think it's hurt us at all. I mean, honestly, I wish Perry would have worked out, but, you know, I think he wasn't really in the spot.
But when you say you wish Perry would have worked at, you're talking more about the last two seasons and not about his decision to go in the portal, right? Like that's
I wish he would have been productive and then we would keep
and I think that, you know, and that could happen where guys who signed with Auburn over the last year or two that you view as, man, I love the potential there, but it just didn't translate into on-field production. You know, you could see some of those guys leave. But I think that, you know, something that I realize I kind of like about as the staff comes together too, Pat, is that, like, I get valuing loyalty and wanting to bring in some guys from your mid-major that you trust. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's not entirely that, right? That you've also got some dudes.
No, it appears he's left the defense, a lot of the defense, to DJ Durkin.
Yeah, I mean,
and I don't have a problem when you put up the offensive numbers that South Florida has the last few years, that Alex Golish is bringing in guys that have worked together doing that.
Like, you got, was it the news about, is it Larry Scott is the defensive line coach that's coming in from South Florida, assistant defensive line coach. He's the son of the head coach at Howard. That was buried in one of the emails. Larry Scott III.
Oh, I didn't see that.
He's going to help, and he's a South Florida guy. But for the most part, you're right. It's been and even a guy like Larry Porter, right? That's a dude who has a lot of SEC experience, including experience at Auburn. And I don't know. I think it shows a willingness to acknowledge that, you know, some of what you did at the mid-major school might need to be adjusted when you come to Auburn.
Well, he's in all honesty, it's like he's 10 times better than I thought, because I was worried. I was just happy he was an offensive guy, but he sounds like the kind of guy which almost I'm starting to believe it is like it would be a great CEO, because he listens. He says, "I'm not doing it my way." You know, it's like he learns, and it's like he's willing to say, "Hey, you know, Auburn has certain things that make Auburn great, and certain people that people love." Yeah. And it's like, and he's a great coach. It's great that he already loved Cody. So that's like, it's not like he's bringing him in to help us out, but they were already so tight. I mean, I just think if someone was here, I'd be. I listen to him. He just keeps cocky, and everybody likes that. But I just feel like he'd have been like, "Nope, I'm doing it my way. If you don't like it, hit the door."
Well, and that's that's refreshing. I think what you're getting from Golish. And look, and you want everybody to be themselves, right? You don't want to have to don't pick up some sort of affectation just because it's like, all right, well, now I'm at Auburn, I got to talk this way. Don't be Brian Kelly. Right, and it's like, all right, well, I got to talk a certain way because now I'm coaching.
Right, I want to change my accent.
Coaching in a certain region, but I think with Alex Golish, like, it's, I think he'll tell you, it's not about him, right? Like,
and he seemed very uncomfortable talking about himself,
and that's the refreshing thing, I think, after in a world of college football coaches, even some guys that have been at Auburn, who will tell you, I alone can fix it. Right, I'm the only person who can.
Exactly.
Alex Golish is giving you like we can do it, and it's going to be done because the right coaches and the right players want to see it done at Auburn.
Hey Pat, I've got to wonder exactly how some folks in Florida are feeling. Like, right now, if you look up, if you check Florida's coaching staff, it is John Sumrall. He brought in Buster Faulkner from Georgia Tech to be the offensive coordinator, brought Brad White from Kentucky as defensive coordinator. That's their staff right now. Those are the only three coaches that are confirmed on that. I'm sure there are others that people probably know about that are down there working. But, yeah, I look at their page. It's the smallest page I've ever seen for a college staff. It's those three coaches, and then they have a GM, and that's it.
Well, it's like our guy is like building. He's like building a science project, and he's like going to make this great thing. That, and he's putting all the pieces together, and he's really using he's using all of his energy and his thoughts and trying to make the best decisions. And is very thoughtful. And it's not like, you know, Gus or Hugh, where it's like this is the way I'm doing it, and I'm stubborn. The word stubborn was used so many times in Auburn. You know, even Harsin was just stubborn people, and we sit here and we just go, well, they're going to change. They're going to change their offense. They're going to do this. They never do. They never do.
And then what Florida's making? Florida's doing like a baking soda volcano. Like, that's what Florida's science project looks like right now.
Yeah, and I mean, but I feel like if Coach Golish does it the way it looks like he's doing it, I mean, clearly he's doing it. I mean, just so meticulously that it almost feels like if it works. Which I believe it will, because I think your coaches buy in. You know, you tell them, oh, you're going to call plays, but then you don't let the guy call the plays. You know, oh, you can have first down. You're not really. You're telling them what you think they want to hear, but then you're saying, do what I say. Whereas I feel like this coach is more like, hey, I want to win this whole thing, and I'm not going to be able to do it just by myself. So I'm going to bring in the best people to help me and us do it together. And DJ, I know that you've got power, you've got people all on your side, and you could totally stab me in the back. But you know what? I don't believe you will, and I don't believe DJ would. I feel like if DJ was going to do that, he would have done that to Hugh Freeze. I think he would have tanked.
Well, I don't think the era of like the window for me where it's like, oh yeah, DJ Durkin can position himself as the head coach. It's like that feels closed now.
Where like
it's
Petrino,
like,
yeah,
at
well,
Auburn.
Like Petrino,
you know what
did.
I mean?
Like, yeah. You know, you could see when someone's trying to weasel their way in. I just feel like DJ said, hey, you know what? I'm very happy here. My wife loves it here. Building a house here, I love it here. My players love me here. I want to be a part of this, and I want this guy to succeed, and that's gonna be better for me and for everything. So I just feel like if you get the people to buy into that and you really mean it, which when I listen to Alex talk, I just feel like he means it. I mean, when I listen to Summerall, I just felt like he was a BSer. I feel like he was saying the right things, but it was almost like, you know, tough boy talk.
No,
insincere. Thinking,
there's an insincerity to it.
Yeah, insincere, exactly. Yeah. I feel like Alex is totally sincere. And, I mean, maybe he's, you know, I feel like you tried to do that. But, he was more, you know, he was just a different kind of animal. But I just feel like when I listen to this guy talk, I actually feel like he's not trying to do this for any other reason than he wants Auburn to win. You know, and knowing that he'll get the glory in the end, but it's not like, well, you know, I'd rather do it my way and go 8-4. You know, I just feel like, oh man, I just feel like that's why I think keeping Deuce is so important, because if you've got a guy that you're training for a whole year in your system to step in the next year, that beats the heck out of going in the portal. I understand what the last caller was saying about how, you know, I'd rather go 7-5. I'm like, no, you want to go 10-2. But man, it'd be worth it to pay $2 million to have a guy ready to step in and be running from day one. That's worth millions to me, I think, for keeping.
Not to mention the value he provides as a backup quarterback.
Oh, absolutely. Like that's one of the things Alex Gullish talked about. He wants to have as good a quarterback room as possible, where number two, in case a guy goes down, your number one guy goes down, you want to have the best guy possible to step in there next, and he wants the best number three guy. Look, sometimes it's not possible to do that, but that's what you want, and that's the goal right now.
Yeah, when I feel like Deuce probably would think that way too. I really do, because and with the player I was talking to when he was a defensive guy, and he said, you know, I said, well, I heard you might be transferring. He goes, oh hell no, I'm not. He goes, I love Auburn. He goes, I'm not leaving Auburn. And he goes, hell, all I'm trying to do right now is I'm trying to get Deuce to stay. And I was there thinking, you're a defensive guy, and you're basically you're telling me right here that your main goal right now is to convince Deuce to stay. So I know that almost probably every player is trying to talk Deuce into staying. So I feel like every he's got to know that fans love him, the fans want him to stay. And look, we want him to do great, but you know, let's get us going first to get the coach on a good winning streak, and then you come in on the home season. When we got all the home Alabama, home Georgia, you know, we have all those games is when you start. And now that would be a great way to come just stepping on in and just kill it. So I couldn't be more happy. I'm telling you, if we had Summerall, I wouldn't even be listening. I'd be doing something else.
You'd have been all the way.
Just thrilled. Yeah. I'd be like crying. Cause I just can't, he'd be all he's worrying about right now is winning that game coming up. That's all he's worried about. But he's not going to want to go in there and lose that game. So to me, he's focusing all his energy on winning a game, and our guy's focusing his energy on making Auburn great. And that's thank God for that.
Real quick, Pat, before you go, Auburn basketball tomorrow. You were at the Michigan game. You saw Arizona last week. Like, what do you want to see the team sort of work on over the next couple of days before next couple of games? You know, you got Purdue next week, and then you got Georgia early January to start SEC play.
If it was me, I would say assists. I would say we want to get 20 assists. We were doing that earlier in the season. We were getting 18, 20 assists in some games, and we got seven assists in that last game. So I wouldn't even care about the score. I would just say I want as many assists as you can possibly get and get as many easy baskets on assists. Because if we start sharing the ball, I think the sky's the limit with this team, because we've got four guys that can make 20 points every night, and some of them can make 30 points. So we know that. It's just getting them to share the ball, and that's probably what I would be picking.
Tahad and Keyshawn Hall looking to get their teammates a little more involved at the expense of taking difficult shots themselves, but those teammates hitting those shots too. Because Tahad, I mean, if you're going to ask Tahad and Keyshawn Hall to keep passing the ball, they can't be passing the ball to bricklayers. Like
some of the numbers Steven had yesterday were surprising. I guess Tahad has the most assists mm-hmm. on the Auburn team, 26 assists but 22 turnovers in 10 ball games, mm-hmm. and that's your point guard. So I mean, yes, yeah, Steven pointed that out, that he said in Auburn's losses, they're averaging 7 assists. In their wins, they're averaging 14 or 15. So, yeah, got it.
Yeah, that's the key. That's the key right there. We got the scores. We got the finishers. We just gotta get them a little bit easier shots, because some of those shots were like, oh, my God. You know, I'm watching us shoot 30-footers, you know, fadeaway 30-footers, and they're shooting 10-foot wide-open shots, you know, so it's like, you know, that was a difference in that for sure. But I think we needed that. We needed that to see what we got to work on, and that's kind of what Bruce always said. I hope to God, my brother said, I heard that Bruce was talking about, they're talking about Bruce going to Kentucky, and Dan said, well, if they offer $15 million, he said, who the heck would turn that down? I was like, oh God. I said, please don't do that.
I believed Bruce when he retired. I still believe him. I think a Kentucky job opening and a full court press would give him something to think about.
Yeah,
for
no
sure.
kidding. How could you not?
Yeah, God, I hope not. All right, guys, War Eagle.
Take care, Pat. Have a good weekend. We need to get to our first break of hour number two. You can join us, 334-321-1390, here on the Friday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros. Russell DeWitt said.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio as we head toward the weekend. So you were thinking about possibly going to Atlanta?
Yeah,
huh?
I might still make the voyage, but I'm at the moment I've been traveling a lot. I wouldn't mind taking a weekend. To watch a game on TV. Ferguson will be in the house. He's probably going to be at every.
He's always there.
That's right. He'll be at Auburn. He'll be at every Auburn game this year, and he'll be asking questions in the post game and recapping it for you over at the Auburn Observer. But yeah, Auburn Chattanooga before Auburn's got Purdue in Indianapolis next week. I mean, once you played Purdue, I mean between Michigan, Arizona, and Purdue, you very likely
and Houston.
There's a chance there's a really good chance you've maybe played the team that's going to win it all, and
yeah.
A couple of Final Four teams probably in that mix. And then when you get to the SEC, like it's almost and there could be an SEC team emerge from the pack. I don't want to speak in absolutes right now, but last year you had so many old, experienced, familiar with each other SEC teams at the top of college basketball: Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee, Florida. And then you had some really good teams in the league in their own right, like Ole Miss and Arkansas and Kentucky. All of them went to the Sweet 16.
It's a different year.
It's a different year,
man. It is. There's not an SEC team in the top 10.
So Vanderbilt is in a lot of the computer top 10s. Uh-huh. I think Vanderbilt is a top 10 net ranking team right now. Alabama and Florida are top 20 net ranking teams. Georgia was just outside the top 20 in the net the last time I looked. But no, I mean, I think you could say right now, like this time last year, 4 or 5 of the 10 best teams in college basketball seemed like they were from the SEC.
Yes, indeed.
And this year the number's probably closer to 0.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's good news for an Auburn program largely starting over, that you've and a team that's played some tough games in November and December. Like when this thing turns over in January and you're playing in Athens the first conference game of the year, I think that's Saturday the 3rd. When that gets going, you're it's on, and it could be, and it's anybody's league, and that's something that I think, and including Auburn's. Like I think this team has shown me enough to beat any team in the SEC right now, and this team has shown
they're
me
talented.
Enough.
They're talented. There's no question. Like Pat was saying, they've got a bunch of guys that can score,
and they're good enough to. Yeah, I think they're good enough to hang with and maybe beat any team in the league. I think they're good enough to go to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament potentially, but my big concern. It's interesting. Pat mentioned assists. My big concern is
rim protection?
No. That's a concern too. Although I feel like that Arizona's in a unique position to exploit a lack of rim protection.
They are, but I mean Auburn's going to run into some teams that are going to try to pound them inside, and I'm a little concerned about the depth.
I think that's
what Auburn has in there.
That's fair, especially you know as you sort of wait for Emeka to become part of the rotation. Right mm-hmm. now, if it's just Sebastian, Jovic,
and the
Keyshawns. Mm-hmm. I mean that's kind of light around the rim, especially because Keyshawn Hall is he's got four size, but that's not really right. his game around the basket.
No, he's definitely more of a three.
I'm a three-four. My concern is that like when things get tense, it can't become about becoming selfish and trying to take difficult shots. Like that's how. Because I think you're not playing teams as good as Michigan or Arizona when you get an SEC play, but you'll be in close games. Like you'll be in close second halves, and your answer when you need to get something going in a close game can't be, all right, well I'm gonna take this. Like and I know with Keyshawn Hall, there's also some attempting to draw a foul in there, but it can't just be I'm gonna put my head down and go to the basket no matter what.
No, and that's another thing. Steven was talking about yesterday. That's the scouting report on Auburn. He said, you know, we have that on other players, and we will say, you know, this player is going to put his head down, and we can double, even triple him. And other teams are realizing they can do that with just about, you know, everybody who has the ball with Auburn has that tendency of wanting to go ahead and try to force that play. And when you look up, And we saw it multiple times against Arizona. You look up, and there's two and three guys. There's a player being triple-teamed, but there doesn't appear to be anybody open because they're, as Steven was saying, they're just hanging out on the perimeter waiting to see what happens with that play. And he talked about a quarter of the points that Arizona and Michigan scored came on what they call bad shots, which are made, he said, when the player is off balance or there's nobody in rebounding position.
I've heard Steven say that. I've heard him say, like, if there's no one in position to rebound, even if you're open, that's a bad shot.
Right.
Because if you miss it, it's going to be a one-and-done possession. And so that's, like, something that that's something he's drilled home. And they're not going to – you know, they have to stay competitive on the boards. And yeah, I like – the mix of Keyshawn Murphy and Sebastian, and I think Jovic is getting better and more comfortable.
I agree. He definitely is.
With college basketball, but it's you're right. That you know, the war around the basket is going to be big every single time Auburn plays, and Auburn wants to be in position to win those battles.
Yeah, so, I mean, they should be able to do that against the scrappy Mocs. Tomorrow, I guess that's late afternoon. Hey,
3:30 tip locally, I believe.
I thought it was 5:30.
Is it 5:30? Okay,
I think so. I thought I heard Brad on the Auburn update today saying that the network's going to be on at 5 and to be a 5:30.
No, I've got 3:30 tomorrow on the SEC network.
He was wrong
on his
little thing, or maybe I probably just heard.
That could be when we tip over to after the game, right around 5:30 or so.
That is something to keep in mind on Saturday. Interesting one tomorrow night.
Yeah, 3:30 tomorrow, SEC Network, by the way, just so okay. you know, people and Wings 94.3 will have the call. You know, Andy and Randall will be there courtside.
Alabama's got Arizona visiting tomorrow. Is that's in Birmingham, right?
That's in Birmingham at Legacy. Nate Oates was lamenting that it was not sold out yet earlier this week. I think maybe they've gotten to that point
That would be a disappointment if you didn't sell that out. I mean that is a very very good Arizona team, and Alabama's not bad. I mean I can't believe Alabama fans wouldn't. I mean it's not like they're playing tomorrow or anything in football.
Yeah, as of Wednesday evening, there were still a plethora of seats available at Legacy Arena at BJCC. Nate Oates talking to the media on Tuesday. This weekend in Birmingham is a big opportunity for our program. Arizona's coming to town as the number one team in the country. Our guys are excited for the challenge. We need Crimson Tide fans packing Legacy Arena and making it as loud as possible there, unquote. And he also mentioned, like, hoping that here we go. Quote, I would hope that basketball fans, Alabama fans in particular, but basketball fans in general in Alabama, appreciate the fact that we're bringing in Arizona and we get a sellout on Saturday. We've done our job bringing in the best teams in the country to play this game in Birmingham, unquote. I think there are still some. I'm going to check Ticketmaster right now.
Well, I mean, if there were Thursday night, Thursday evening, that's a surprise right there.
Yeah, you can get in for $30 right now if you want to see Alabama and Arizona in Birmingham on Saturday.
Yeah, so
a little surprising, right? That's a big gym, but it was packed for Auburn Houston.
It sure was. All right. We've got about 25 minutes left here on the Friday edition of The Drive. We haven't really gotten into, we sort of briefly addressed it, but the SEC announced schedules for every team. We knew the teams. We knew the opponents. We just didn't know how they were going to line up. We can talk about that in the final 20 minutes or so of the show. If you'd like to join in, 334-321-1390. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Stick with us here on the Friday Drive. Evening. Hope everybody has a good weekend coming up. Looks like the weather is going to cooperate. I thought that we might get a little rain, just a slight chance. It's going to be chilly, though. Going to be cold once we get done with the weekend. But the weekend looks pretty nice, so enjoy, everybody. 334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Let's get back to it.
Mitch is next up.
Hey, guys. Wanted to weigh in, I guess, on this Deuce Knight thing. Me personally, being as old as I am, I would think that the perfect storm would be to bring in the South Florida quarterback who already knows the system and let Deuce pretty much be his shadow. And then next year, Deuce takes over and he's got 3 years play quarterback, or mm-hmm. you know, unless he lights it up and goes to the NFL early. But you know, that but I know when I was 19 years old I didn't make the best decisions either, so but that's my take. I think you should stay and we bring the Brown guy in. What do you guys think?
I think that's what Auburn would love, is to be able to bring in Byron Brown and keep Deuce Knight and have him, you know, have him learn the system and be ready in case needed and be able to compete. I mean, look, if he's able to earn playing time, that's great. But I do know that Alex Golish seems very excited about the prospects of Deuce Knight's future, but they know exactly what they have in Byron Brown.
Oh, yeah, I didn't realize he had the numbers that he had. I mean, I didn't watch.
Led the nation in total offense this past year.
Yeah, and I mean, I know I listened to a local show down here in the morning. Andy actually talks to him on Thursday, the Coach James Hale show. Mm-hmm. He's brought up South Florida and how they gave Alabama all they wanted a few years ago, and I think our coach was coaching them then. I don't remember, but anyway, he was very excited about the hire and everything, and so I am too. Yeah, I hope Deuce stays. I don't know, maybe Pat and Dan can do something down at Skybar, you know, to put on the marquee or something. You know, Deuce stay, we love you or something. Anyway, that's all I got, guys. War Eagle.
Appreciate it, Mitch. Yeah, it has been interesting to hear. I mean, I understand. Look, nobody, no Auburn fan wants to lose Deuce Knight. That's not the concern. That's not the.
Yeah, you can't turn your back on an option that you think helps you more immediately. Like, as much as I like Deuce Knight, and I would love to see Deuce develop into Auburn starter, it's like, let's keep in mind, like, he wasn't the starter in the Iron Bowl.
Right.
Like, the reason he started the Mercer game was because they wanted to preserve Ashton's eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and that's not to say Deuce couldn't eventually be a fantastic starter, but yeah, the list of, if it's specifically about Byron Brown, it's like the list of quarterbacks in the bowl subdivision who have had a 3,000 passing, 1,000 rushing yard season this decade, the list is Jaden Daniels and Byron Brown. Like that's wow. That's the list of guys that have gone 3,000, 1,000. You can keep going further back and you add names like
there have only been, I mean, he is the 12th all time.
And the other dudes are like Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts,
Johnny Manziel,
Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Like it's Vince Young. Like it's superstars. And so yeah, I just think that like as like acknowledging Deuce's potential, the thought that you would reject something like that, not to mention it's a player who knows the system because you hired his coaches from South Florida.
Oh yes.
Like on top like
it's
like
all of the offensive guys that were involved with him for the last 2 years.
I mean, does it potentially put you on the treadmill in the year after that? Sure. So did bringing in Cam Newton, right? Like instead of letting a younger player, like, I mean, I'm not saying that's, you know, what's going to happen, but like, all right, like that's true. But you also, I mean, Cam had eligibility remaining, but it's like, I don't know. Like if you see a guy that you think can, like if you see a winner out there and you feel like you have the inside track, like I just don't know how you, as great as it would be to see Deuce develop, I don't know how you possibly like spurn Byron Brown if that's an option.
Right. If that is an option, like, you have to pursue it.
Sure.
Because if you have a chance at a special year, I mean, that reminds me of the years ago when there would be concern that we might, if we win too many, then people may come after our assistant coaches. Don't worry about winning too many. I mean, if you want to win as many as you can that next year. Don't be, let's hold them and we can have a really special year in 2 years. No, there are no guarantees of that.
And this is with all due respect to what Ashton and Deuce did down the stretch, you know, after the coaching change. And yeah, but we've seen this before where it's like, yes, sometimes part of going in a new direction is going in a new direction at quarterback, right? Nick Marshall wasn't on the team in 2012. He was part of a new direction at quarterback. You look and, I mean, Hugh Freeze immediately went to Peyton Thorne.
And wow, I was going to say, you don't want to get into the comparisons there.
No, but
because there was a young guy that there were people like, why aren't we playing him?
Yeah,
instead of Nick.
But I don't know if you necessarily. Oh well, sure. I think there was also Robbie, right? Who folks, when Hugh Freeze got here and brought in Peyton Thorne, there were a lot of fans saying, well, why aren't we just sticking with Robbie and rolling with Robbie through several years of development and. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's, like, I get the attachment you have to the guy you've already seen wear the uniform and the guy that has earned your respect by committing to Auburn already. I get that. I just don't think you can let sentimentality, emotion, you know, sort of keep you from bringing in somebody that could be a huge part of the turnaround if he's as advertised. And that's, you know, there's a reason. You know, South Florida's AD and their president are putting out alerts about Byron Brown.
How we want to hold him out and have him coach the game, and please stay.
He could be the AD if he wants to be, right?
he may be. Yeah.
Ask the president. This is what it would take for me to stay. You know, but like that's that's what's going on. And I think there's a reason why people view him with that kind of. They hold him in that regard.
Oh, absolutely. All right. We'll go ahead and get to our final break. If we get a chance, we'll take a look at Auburn's schedule and how it lays out for next year.
Do that when we come back.
Yeah, we'll do that. So stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
1907. Auburn had no paved roads, no local
of the drive. And last night, the Southeastern Conference unveiled the full SEC schedule. Every team knew who their opponents were going to be in the first year of the 9-game conference schedule, but we didn't know when. And, you know, you worried about, are you going to have to play back-to-back-to-back road games? Are there going to be very long stretches without an open date? Well, this is first of all, this is one of the years where there's just one open date. It's generally leap year, where you get the extra the extra week, that second open date. Sometimes it adjusts and is a fifth year. But this is one of the years where there's just one open date with a nine-game conference schedule. And Auburn's open date, I think, comes at probably as good a time as you could get. After their fifth game, they're going to have to play seven consecutive games after that. But the only time Auburn has back-to-back road games, there's an open date in between. So I think that is good. The Tigers open up, you mentioned it earlier, Dan, with four straight. Well, actually, you have the Baylor game in Atlanta, then three straight home games against Southern Miss, and then starting conference play with the Florida Gators and then Vanderbilt. So Auburn will not play a road game until its fifth week of the season when they head to Knoxville to take on Tennessee.
You look and early on in the season, I mean, and honestly, I mean, I understand why that home game against Baylor would have been great. I was on, you know, I understood the arguments when folks were upset that it was moved to Atlanta. The fact that you have three home games after that, like I wonder if Southern Miss and to that extent even Vandy would have had the same kind of steam if they were home games number 2 and 4 in a row.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Rather than home games 1-3. It's a shame to lose the Baylor game. And the second half of that season, you know, as I mentioned, once you're done playing LSU at home, and when's the LSU game?
Let's see. I just pulled off of that. Here we go. Let me get back to LSU is after. All right. The back-to-back road games are Tennessee, open date, then Georgia.
Right.
Then October 24th, that next week, LSU comes in.
So the thought that when the LSU game is over on October 24th, you have two home games left in the entire season.
That's true.
And it's Arkansas and Samford. Like, that's going to be, depending on how the season is going.
But I'd say the schedule is still manageable because you've got, you've got Mississippi State is one of the road games. Obviously, you close things out against Alabama. But, I mean, it could be worse.
Ole Miss is around then, too, right?
Yeah, you've got Ole Miss. As a matter of fact, here's the stretch. The stretch is after the open date, you're at Georgia, host LSU, and go to Ole Miss. So that four-game stretch, which Tennessee, there is at least an open date. But the at Georgia, host LSU, and then go to Oxford back-to-back-to-back weeks to wrap up the month of October is pretty tough.
I mean, just kind of like we've been saying for a couple of years now, like when you – what does your season look like after a couple of conference games? Right, Auburn's – especially – look, when you're talking about Auburn starting the year 0-3 and 0-4 in conference under Hugh Freeze over and over again, and you just felt like after that – third conference loss to start SEC play, it's like, well, you have to play great to finish 4-4 in SEC play, mm-hmm. at that point. And for Auburn, home games against Florida and Vandy, if you can start conference play with a bang, right, if you can win a couple of your early SEC games, suddenly the season looks, that schedule looks a little bit more manageable, and that schedule looks like something you can navigate with some confidence. If you get punched in the face early in the season, right, Florida and Vanderbilt come in here and outclass you, it's gonna feel like you're at least a season away already, and you'll have a lot of football still after that Vanderbilt game.
No question about that.
Baylor, Florida, and Vanderbilt feel like opportunities.
Yes,
and if those are early tests, if you fail all of them,
oh, you're in trouble. It's gonna
stay after
school. It's gonna be a long first year for Alex Golish and company. But I mean, they have some opportunities there early. But as we said a while ago, there's so many more questions around the SEC this year, and Auburn's got a few of those teams that how's Vandy gonna be without Diego Pavia and Eli Stowers? How's Florida going to be in its first year? That's the first conference game for both Auburn and Florida. It is pretty interesting that it's Alex Golish against John Sumrall, and then you've got obviously you know, with Lane Kiffin leaving Ole Miss for LSU, you have those two teams back-to-back. And you don't really know exactly what those teams are going to be like. Well, you have
how surprised
back to, you have back-to-back-to-back games against teams with new coaches with the LSU, Ole Miss, and Arkansas games.
How surprised would you be if LSU's a juggernaut in year one?
Not at all.
Lane Kiffin.
Not at all.
Like if they make the right moves as far as keeping the players they're excited about and bring
they were able to keep Brad Baker. Pay him enough to keep him from going to Tulane as head coach at right. his alma mater.
And then if you bring in some of the right pieces at different positions, including quarterback, right? Maybe LSU's immediately that team that they think they can be under Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, I'm not going to be shocked, but it's interesting to look at. I mean, we can get into the teams that had got the best draw and some that had the worst. Is it Texas and Oklahoma that each have 8 straight games, conference games, to wrap up the season? That's tough. That is really tough. Fun day today. We are out of time, though, here on the Friday Drive. Dan, have a good weekend.
Appreciate it. You too, Bill.
Yep, we've got a little family, one of the family Christmas. Hey, we'll see how Dirty Santa goes this weekend.
Well, happy 5-month.
That's right, Will.
To Big Willie.
He is, absolutely. All right, that's going to do it for the Friday Drive. We're back Monday. Brian Matthews joins us. Hope you will as well. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are out of here.